to the No BS Short-Term Rental Podcast, an unfiltered look into the global vacation and short-term rental industry.
I'm Mateo Bradford.
And I'm John Stokinger.
And this is our podcast. We bring the right people to the table at the right time, giving you an inside view and take on the short-term rental industry like no other podcast can.
Good morning, Mateo. How are you?
Fantastic, John. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, man. This is actually episode 30. Because we recorded
30,
one yesterday.
30.
Yeah, we made 30. Yeah, and 30, not only 30, is this 30. Episode 30, this is our Thanksgiving special. This will drop on Thanksgiving. Yep. Gobble, gobble, I guess. All right. You know, maybe we could kind of get into what we're thankful for at the end here. But
I'll start in the beginning. Why save it to the end? Gratitude up front, brother.
Well, we'll introduce our guest here. What's that?
I'm grateful for you.
And
you know what? As since we are on this topic and I'm remiss, thank you for your service, brother. We didn't get a chance to highlight that in our Veterans Day reach out. And, you know, one of the things, you know, that's close to my heart, you know, working with Anthony and you know, our military service members with At Ease, you know, one of the things I do not want to neglect is that. And I think, you know, I know you put your LinkedIn post out, but I don't know a lot of people really know your story of service and the time you spent in the military and serving our country. So, brother, I'm grateful for you and grateful for your service. Thank you.
Well, thanks, man.
And I'm grateful for our great guest that you're going to introduce this week.
I am going to introduce. I'm excited. We'll get into what we're thankful for, but I appreciate that. This week we are joined by the one, the only, Wes Melton. He is currently new role, 2 months fresh, little wet behind the ears here, CTO of Casago. So, Wes, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Yeah, man. Excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, it's we've talked for months now about you getting on, and you've been busy, and we've been busy, and we've had a great lineup, and I'm glad you could get on here. There's a lot to talk about. Wes obviously is now CTO, but you know, I'm sure most of us or a lot of us have been known are from the Nicori Pulse. He and his team developed that, and it's kind of the social media, and I'll let him tell his story, but it's kind of a great place to go ahead and share specific to the hospitality and our short-term rental market. It's a great place to connect and kind of share different things. Obviously before that, you know, a little bit, the time with, you founded StaySense, and then before that was smokymountains.com. So we'd love to hear your story. I guess I'm going to jump in real quick. And, you know, since we talked Thanksgiving and this is jumping on Thanksgiving, what am I thankful for? I'm thankful for the opportunity, to do what we do and to kind of talk to people and just be a part of this great. Obviously I'm thankful for my family and all those things, but you know, kind of stay focused on the short-term space. I'm thankful that, you know, Mateo and I met and we connected and we pursued and we've overcome. You know, we got some big news coming out next month that we're excited to share, and that pertains to the No BS Short-Term Rental Podcast. And I'm just thankful for all this. I'm thankful for the guests that come on every week. So that's my thing. Tell us your story, Wes. You know, how did you get here? You know, this has been a hell of a journey.
Man, thanks so much again for having me. And yeah, I guess the thing I'm thankful for on the professional front, obviously super grateful, excited to be having, you know, just come on as CTO at Casago. Just a lot of really incredible people at that company that I've already gotten to meet, and just a lot of like-mindedness that I'm stepping into, which is exciting. Professionally, I've gotten to work with some of the most brilliant and incredible people, and gotten to know a lot of really brilliant, incredible people in our space, like you guys. And it's just really cool that even after almost 10 years in the space, I'm still meeting people for the first time that that just continue to blow me away in terms of just how they think and the perspectives that they share. And so that's just a rare and incredible blessing, I think. So in terms of my story, man, I've been the basement tech nerd since I was a kid. I still remember my dad showing up in 95 with a box that had CalPrint on it. And I was like, what is this? And it was, everyone who's old enough to remember is like, oh God, am I really that old? I remember like a week later getting in trouble because I'd taken the computer apart, just cause I wanted to figure out how it worked. And then I couldn't figure out how to put it back together. So my love affair with tech and just how things work, I think started pretty young.
Our first, by early the way, was a Tandy. The Radio Shack.
I can. Wow. I had a Commodore 64.
Oh yeah.
Then I had a Tandy. Oh bro.
Yeah.
I mean, but we're gonna dig into his background for those who are on video and looking at his amazing, his amazing, what I call that wall of fame, like the toy wall of fame, like all those dream toys you wish you had when you were growing up.
So for everyone listening, all we've communicated so far is that we're all really old. in my kind of mid-20s, I broke into a software system known as SAP. The year I got into it, they like 94% of all retail transactions globally went across an SAP system. So I was implementing those, kind of big companies. The downside of big companies is politics, corporate life, just a lot that goes with that. So after about 5 or 6 years of that, I got burnt out on the corporate side pretty quickly. But at the same time, in my personal life, I'd been building a friendship with David Ngati, who I'm sure a lot of people know and recognize in the industry at this point. Mm-hmm. And so we naively assumed that it would be a good idea and, to go start a property management business. He and his wife had sold an ed tech business and they had bought a rental cabin in the Smokies and they were pretty unhappy with how it was being managed, as the story goes for so many people that got in the industry convinced they could do it better. So it goes with us, that naive optimism. That's what we did. We founded SmokyMountains.com. We moved our families from Memphis, Tennessee to the other side of the state to run operations locally there in the Gatlinburg market. We grew that company for just right at 3 years. We went from one to about 120 units before it was acquired by Steve Milo, actually. Mm-hmm. We negotiated holding on to the brand and the website, SmokyMountains.com. So we actually pivoted back into more of like a tech and marketing roles for ourselves, which I think historically was kind of where we had operated most of our career. So we actually became a niche OTA to the space or to that location. And then,
Which sidebar here is exactly where Teo and I met, and every people that are listening, we talk about this a lot, but we have I have a slight love affair with the Gatlinburg, Sevier County, like that whole area there. Like as interesting as it is, and there's a lot of weird backward stuff there, and the community is so tight. And it's so, I mean, I love the people there, but it's like, if you don't know the right people, you're not getting into it either.
100%.
It is, it's just such a cool, like amazing vacation rental county, from Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg and Sevierville, like you got it all covered there. But yeah, that's where Mateo and I met actually early in our, I think I was with the company like a month and it was like free VRM Intel / VRHP thing. Happened.
We're going to have to do a show on that night, man. Cause that was actually, it was like Amy Hynote's birthday. It was me, you, Jody, and a whole bunch of other people in some in the space now, some not, but I don't want to hide. So actually driving back into this West, man, I don't want to overshadow what you and Dave did. Shout out to Dave, shout out to Steve, for that move. What you guys did was really brilliant and at the forefront of kind of driving tech in the industry forward, shedding the property management company, but keeping an OTA that kept you directly in the market. Man, talk to us about that. How did you guys finesse that? Because that was actually a heads up play, a heads up move at a time where people weren't even thinking in that realm. They were selling their companies and moving on to the next thing. You actually sold it with, you know, residual value in the market in which you sold. And so,
yeah,
you know, you don't see that happen a lot. That was actually a pretty heads up move. And I want to hear about your strategy behind that.
Sure, man. Yeah. So I think early on in the management business, David and I both just recognized that it was critical that we owned our customer all the way through, from, you know, top of funnel to they've stayed with us and hopefully we've had a great stay, and now we, you know, it's on us to bring them back again. So when we started, you know, dude, just like any other property management company, you know, we were buying revenue, right? I mean, and most people in the industry still are. You know, we were buying the most expensive listings on HomeAway and VRBO and whatever other third party channels that we could find that actually produced revenue. But that was always a short-term game for us. And so pretty early on, we started the effort of really trying to build out SmokyMountains.com as really the premier destination online for pretty much anything you could possibly want to know about the destination. So, I mean, we had went out and spent a lot of money and time on doing everything from taking original, really high quality photos of like every single, you know, attraction, all of the park trails. I mean, we set up, I mean, like actual walkthroughs of most of the attractions with the attraction owners. And we were working with writers that had, you know, had written for top tier news outlets to write these long form reviews and what the experience is like. And the goal behind all of that, you know, was, you know, the more typical content marketing play, right? Of like actually driving traffic that's actually relevant to the destination we're in. So by the time we, you know, we were acquired, in about 3 years' time, we had made it to about 60 to 65% direct book through traffic that was on the site. And so when Milo approached us about buying the company, you know, for us, the side of the business that I think we underestimated was the operational side. I mean, we ran a good business, but at the end of the day, the operational side was hell. And we both had and do have families with small kids, and it just kind of felt like, you know, we were absentee fathering quite a bit, which had quite a bit of stress on the wives too. So when he approached us on buying the company, I think David and I, you know, when we thought about quality of life, and we thought about the fact that, I mean, Steve's offer was good. It was a good offer. It seemed like if we could essentially let him buy our contracts, but hold on to what we had built on the digital side, then that would be a deal.
I mean, we've been talking about brand a lot. This is your brand. You know, it's more than just the digital side, which it's a brand as well. It's all encompassing, minus the contracts, right? Minus the actual physical homes and the operations side. It's just taking the operations out and keeping the rest.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, we kind of felt like Steve probably wouldn't go for it, honestly. But much to our surprise, he did. And so, I mean, the rest is kind of history after that. Well, that and the night before we were supposed to close is when the Gatlinburg wildfires hit. That was an awful night. So Steve was, you know, I'll say this. Steve was super cool. We didn't close the next morning, obviously, but like we did close about a week and a half later. And he was super fair to us because we did have some inventory that burnt down. But you know, I know that he can get the reputation of kind of being a rough and tumble guy sometimes, but I'll say he was extremely fair to us, and we felt like it was still a really good deal. So anyway, so that happens. And yeah, so then we pivot basically into no longer being a competitor of property management companies in the space, but you know, now we need to actually go be a vendor to them, you know, but you know, again, guys, it actually, I mean, I think it speaks to the typical quality of person in our space. I mean, a lot of the biggest competitors we had in that market were some of the first to sign up when we came in. We were like, hey, guess what? We're out of the management game, but we want to create bookings for you. And it was a runaway hit. I mean, our first 12 months, we produced, more than seven figures in bookings for our first year partners. And it just continued to grow after that. So, it felt like a homecoming in a way, though. I think that, again, the tech marketing biz dev side of things was, I think, more in line with kind of our historic skill sets in terms of what we had done in our career. But I think having that operational experience really changed the way that we saw and understood the market as well as opportunity in the market. And I think that even now, I think that a lot of the pain that you see happening with software companies in our space and their own growth journeys seems to have at least some strong tie to the fact that no one at the helm has actually been an operator.
Right.
I think there's a certain level of disconnect with what the problem really is. And so I think for the folks that have been operators, even for just a short period of time, I think their perspective is, frankly, I just think it's just a lot stronger. I think it's a lot more educated in terms of what the problem actually is that they're trying to solve. And so I think that was, even though it was a very intense 3 years, it's as an operator, it's a 3 years I'm deeply grateful for, because I think that it's given me a level of perspective and experience that has very deeply and uniquely changed how I think about building tech and solutions in the industry.
I think it's, I'm going to put an exclamation point and an amen from the choir on that part, because I actually, it's something I'm living right now. John knows. So I manage a small boutique hotel out of Portland.
Oh, cool.
And, I coming from the rented side of the tech side of the business, you build these relationships with managers, you get your perspective on their business, and you really do not have a firm understanding of what it takes to be a manager, let alone to be a successful manager within this space, until you are elbow deep in it, knee deep in this, and really yep. understand what those issues are, how it is done, how hard it is to be a good manager or a good host within this space, whatever you want to call it, an operator within this space. And, it's one of the things that I feel like I'm still learning, and looking back in terms of what I wish I would have had to give perspective to helping build better tech, better product, better solutions for managers within that space, is a real experiential background to help and understand, because it's theory versus application. And that theory is all fine and good, but that application and getting your hands dirty in that space really allows you to understand what it takes and what is needed, from the tech package for these managers. And I just can't say that enough. I think, these companies are going to have to really learn that if they're going to continue to or build products that are really going to be valuable and useful for managers today and in the future.
I'm not going to pretend that I had any of the experience that either of you have had, but what I can say is my first half of my career was I sold one product and like I'm payment processing, and that's all I really understood. And until I went to Track and saw really were able to go ahead and deep dive and talk with the accountants and talk with the operation and talk housekeeping and talk all the different departments from the back end all the way to the front end, and again, I don't have that hands-on knee deep experience, but at the same time I started to grasp it and understand, wow, these what are these pain points? Someone that's good at sales and is selling an enterprise solution is going to understand, and really dive into what are your issues and what are your issues with your current solution and how can we make that better? And so you really start to understand. And, operationally, have I done it? No. And I'm not going to pretend I have. But at the same time, it was a great experience for me for two years at Track to really go, holy shit, there's a lot to this that I didn't. And what, and how can we make a better product to make their life easier? And I understand, the small, I don't have small anymore, but four kids and like being pulled away and like, that's your life. That's hard, man. Let's talk, you know, so you sold Smoke. You're just now on smokymountain.com. Let's talk about Stay Sense. That was a couple of years. And then Nikori, and because I really want to get into where you're at here with Casago.
Yeah, so I mean, at the end of the day, Stay Sense was really just taking that same model that we had proven in the Smokies, and it was the process of starting to replicate it, in other vacation destinations across the U.S. So Nikori for me was really. It was interesting. The goal, the heart behind it changed so much in the first 3 months because, the COVID pandemic hit right as we were gearing up to go to market. We had already hired people. We already had a roadmap that we were trying to build, and then the pandemic hits and the quarantine hits, and we watched travel take a nosedive. And so, as the only investor and founder of the company, there was definitely a pretty sick moment there where you're just like, no, and there's no crystal ball you could go rub that would tell you what's going to happen. So, I think after sitting down and thinking about it and just kind of watching some of the conversations that I was getting pulled into just from different, friends I had in the industry that were trying to figure out what to do. That's really where the heart and soul of the concept for Pulse really came out of. I think that the reality at the time, it felt like the industry's fragmentation was really bearing what I would say maybe negative fruit of that reality, where you just had a ton of people that were looking for help, that were looking to stay connected to what was happening. And not everyone, I think, was fortunate to have those peer groups or those networks where they could really just go lean on people that, for example, when the paycheck protection loans and stuff were going around, I mean, it was so cool to me to watch some guys, like they went and did all of the legwork to figure it all out. And then they documented all of it. And then they were like, hey, here, and they handed it off to like 15 other managers. And they're like, hey, I already did all the legwork. Here's what you need to do. Here's the process. And so for me, it was really just like that realization that even when I was a manager, it felt like it was really difficult to navigate the space in terms of like understanding who are the key players, who are the key vendors, what do the different suppliers do? What's the reputation? What do they have to say about this? So I think when I think about LinkedIn, I think about Facebook, I mean, those guys are the giants, right? My intention wasn't really to compete with them. I think our intention was to build something that was other, where it was very niche tailored and niche oriented, so that reach was huge, right? I mean, our space is small at the end of the day. So I think brands that participate, the mentality was, you don't have to worry about trying to reach billions and pay to play, right? The community is small enough that you can just create good content and have great things to say and build a meaningful audience of people that are exactly your ideal customer. Right. But also, I think the goal too was to help people just stay connected with what's happening. Before the show, we were talking about some of the news that's dropped over the last couple of days that I hadn't even seen yet. And just how fast things are changing right now and how every day we're hearing of companies that a lot of us hadn't even heard of, and we've been in the space for 10 years, that are raising these seed rounds or these series Bs, the mindset I think was let's try to help people connect with what's happening, connect with each other. That was really the heart behind it. And so from there, I think on that same kind of idea of like, how do we connect with people? A need that we kept hearing over and over again was how do we connect with homeowners that are with other companies, or maybe they've never listed their home at all for rent, but they want to? How do we reach those people effectively? How do we leverage modern technology to do it? And that's really where our product audiences came from. We felt like we were kind of at an inflection point where technology on the MarTech side of the world had matured it felt like in almost every other industry except for ours.
Right.
At least on that front. And so it felt like a really cool niche opportunity to get to start tackling that in some cool ways. And so, you know, on paper, everything with the business was going really well. I mean, in the first 6 months since we actually launched the product, we had closed like just over 100,000 in sales. And we were about to double down on some cool initiatives we had. And it was around the same time that Steve Schwab and Ryan Dame from Costigo, they were like, hey, why don't you come build that tech for us and our franchisees? And I've known these guys for a long time.
Schwab's one of my favorite people. I love Steve. Anytime I can get a, you know, 5 minutes of his time, I'm going to learn something amazing.
Yeah, they're both incredible people at the end of the day.
I know Schwab pretty well.
I know Ryan too. Ryan Dame's a great guy. Good friend.
Little known fact about Ryan. I don't know why I love pointing this out, but Ryan actually invented the purple mattress.
What?
Are you guys?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if he got to ride the ride all the way up. I think maybe he got acquired somewhere along the rocket ride to the moon. But that was our boy Ryan. So man.
Great business
acumen,
man. Great business mind. He's
Oh yeah.
He has a child support, man. I love talking to him.
Both of those guys, though, like you talk to them, and like the more you talk to them, you're like, wait a minute, you did what?
Right.
You know? I know, they're both just so accomplished. So for me, it was really exciting to get to really go learn from some guys that have done some. I mean, they've done things at a different level than I have at the end of the day. Costco, they're I think just over 3,500 units strong, and right now they're kind of in the mode of making a big push to start franchising across the US and globally. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of the strategy is we need to build tech that if it was on the showroom floor would be competitive in and of itself, but we need to own it and reserve it for our franchisees. So that was kind of the mentality when they were looking at, acquiring the company, was we want to start building and owning tech that you can only get it. You can only use it if you're, if you're a franchisee. But it can't suck, right? Like, it has to be really, really good. It has to be something that would be competitive if it actually was available to the open market. And so I think for me, thinking about growing a national brand, and, you know, I think with the broader goal of going international at some point, super attractive, super exciting to think about being a part of something like that with guys that are as accomplished as Ryan and Steve are, and their whole team. I mean, there's a team of really solid people there, as you might imagine.
Right.
So, for me, when the conversation happened, I didn't really have to think that much about it. I think the opportunity to get to go work with folks like that and to work on something that big was super exciting. Been here for a few weeks now, so I'm still getting up to speed. But I think in my role, Steve and Ryan really want to bring me on to help really drive kind of the next generation of tech for the company and to build some really cool tech for our managers and franchisees that, you know, I think ultimately has the goal of creating incredible homeowner experiences, as well as creating very enriching traveler experiences at the same time. Right. And so that's really the why I think they've got me on there. And that's really kind of the direction that I'm going is really building tech that makes those relationships on both sides of the business really incredible and enjoyable and enriching. So
it sounds amazing. Congratulations, by the way. Like, that's
thanks, man.
You know, it's an up and down and back and forth journey from, you know, but it's kind of cool to see where you end up. I'm excited to see how, you know, your contributions and what they're going to go ahead and bring to the managers and, you know, the whole front. You know, we've talked about this in the past, the franchise, you know, model is, you know, a proven model of success, and there's lots of people that think that that is the direction our space should be going, and it's being proven. And congrats.
Well, I think the perspective is the right word, but I think what a lot of managers on the local level are missing is that the ability to compete nationally as a top of mind brand is changing in terms of how right. that war is won. It used to be you could fight that battle by just buying listings on Humway and VRBO. But yeah. I think that when you look at the billions of dollars that are being poured into companies like Sonder, companies like Vacasa, who are spending an unreal amount of money on national level advertising, to me, I think it kind of highlights the reality that like the basis of competition is changing. And that's actually kind of our slogan on the franchisee sell side, is that Costco exists to help managers win locally while competing nationally.
We'll let it slide. We know you've only been there a couple months. We'll let it slide this time.
I started stuttering and then I got nervous and then it was all downhill after that. But yeah, I mean, I think for us, we always think the local hero is going to be a need for any property management business. But I think there's also that reality of needing to have some way to start competing nationally with building a national brand. And John, I mean, in your new role, I mean, that's kind of your whole bread and butter, right? As an OTA, you guys have got to compete nationally, right?
100% globally. I mean, our direction, you know, we're starting here in North America, but yeah, it's a little bit different. We'll definitely talk. We're going to have a great conversation after the new year talking more about it. But it's, 100%.
Yeah. I got to throw a monkey wrench in here real quick. And kind of back this up a little bit. And since we're talking about this and you're talking about the local hero, you know, versus the Goliath, right? And I'm going to use a Star Wars analogy because you got all my favorite Star Wars stuff behind you, right? And, you know,
that's so right.
Where Costco is going, where V-Trips is going, where all the larger players are going, and that being seen as the dark side of the force, right? Versus, you know, the little man and the local, you know, the local hero, right, within that space. And I don't know, and I think it's going to be interesting to see that they can't both coexist, right? And, you know, like I said, John and I talked to someone the other day who has 7 rooms and, you know, it's running a great business and, you know, it quit its corporate job with this partner and is living a beautiful life, making great money and providing a great experience to guests in that space and has no want or no desire to be Vacasa or to be, you know, Costco or to be V-Trips or to be any one of these larger players within the space. And, you know, as we see one side of the business consistently evolving at scale, Vacasa got big boy commercials now, right? You can't watch football. You can't watch anything. Like they're spending big time money that we don't even see hotels spending right now, right? On, you know, for whatever reason, but we don't see other players, you know, except for the Expedias and the VRBOs and sometimes Bookings, you know, putting these advertising campaigns out there. Vacasa's, when I say one of our own, like our organic STR-based business, is the only one that I've seen that's got those national commercials that's a manager, not an OTA, not previously back within that space. So as that grows in scale, like, how do you, again, have that conversation, you know, with managers and change the narrative instead of, you know, black and white, good and bad in terms of the, hey, how do we, you know, look at this ecosystem with everything involved and understanding that, you know, this industry has been thriving and continues to push forward with all of us in this space, you know, regardless of your size and scope and not knowing, and especially with people that don't want to grow and be that space. So people are fine in their lane and are going to stay there and want to be there. You know, how does that help you, right? And build out a franchise, build out technology for this industry, knowing that, right? Knowing like where Costco wants to grow, but also knowing the impact that, you know, markets are going to have and who's going to be left as like residual in those markets, regardless of whatever you guys are doing.
I think that the internet age has taught us that the laws of business and the laws of psychology, no one is excluded from. And on the e-commerce side, when we think about this, one of the very real applications of that is that you can build an e-commerce site that doesn't work or look anything like how Amazon does. But you're losing sales when you do that because you've got giant players that have trained people that this is how an e-commerce website works. This is how you navigate. This is how filters work. This is how you you navigate through categories. And there's, I mean, there's a number of studies out there that have been done at even the, I mean, at the collegiate level that have shown that like the internet, like the largest websites on the internet have trained people how to use the other websites. I think that's true with any brand that's sufficiently big. And I think that when you look at the quality of the app experience that Airbnb has been delivering for a long time, and then you look at a lot of the recent investments that VRBO has been making to try to catch up, I think the simple fact of the matter is a company as big and pervasive as Airbnb, I don't think that we have the option other than to believe that they're training people what a first-class experience looks and feels like when you're trying to book a vacation home. And so I start there to say, I don't think local managers are going to get away from that reality just because they're local or just because they feel really passionately about their brand or just because they know more about the local area than, you know, the big boys do. I think the reality is many managers at the local level still struggle to compete on not just the tech side, but on the branded tech, right? So things that have actually been really deeply thought through from the usability perspective. You know, Airbnb's tech, it's not just functional, it's also usable, and it's usable in a really beautiful and fine-tuned way. And so I think that there are just aspects like that that no one's going to get away from. And I would say that that's true for Costco. I would say it's true for, you know, Milo over at VTrips. I don't think that any number of inventory is really going to help you escape those realities, that there are brands much, much bigger than us that have been training people that, hey, this is what a quality e-commerce experience looks like and feels like. And they've got teams of people that are doing nothing but obsessing every single day on how do we make this experience better. So when I think about how does the franchise model work, how do we make sure it really is for the local hero? Where does that leave the people that have got these, you know, 7-bedroom boutique hotels? For us, I mean, our approach is very, very manager centric. We let people keep their local brand. You know, we drive a lot of very strong cost reductions. We actually work to help increase their quality of life, but we still understand that at the end of the day, these people are entrepreneurs. They've got a business that they've grown and want to continue to grow. And for us, we look at it a lot more like we're coming alongside you to help you compete and be competitive in the areas that your company likely will never be big enough to actually do.
You're bringing
the flip side to that is,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say,
go ahead, John.
A lot of what these smaller managers and these home are missing are the accessibility to quality UI and UX, and having sure. that and to be able to bring that into, and you know, we're talking like user experience here, and you know, we're talking apps and we're talking you know these major websites, and you're right. Everyone's trained. Everyone knows how to go ahead from start to finish and go to a shopping cart and book and do all these different things because there's a certain way we've been taught for years, you know, and especially the younger generations, they're born with a cell phone in their hands. It's slightly disturbing for us Gen Xers. At least that's where I stand. I'm not sure exactly where you're at. You know, but I think as a Gen Xer, I've gone from no internet all the way through to, you know, being very not only, you know, capable, but confident with all new tech. So like we're that one generation that's kind of seen both sides, not just.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And but like having accessibility to this tech to be competitive, whether it be in a franchise model or just. There's so many great brands on there. There's so many great,
sure.
You know, it's accessible now, but you have to be open to it, and you got to be okay to be like, all right, hey, like everyone else in our community or in our region are giving these guest experience or these homeowner experience, you know, but we're not. So this is obviously where we need to go ahead and up our game. And how are we going to do that? Are we going to do it through a franchise? Are we going to go ahead and do it some other ways? But there's no right answer. It's just, you know, understanding where you're falling flat potentially.
I think on the you know, Mateo, on the smaller operator, you know, the guy that's got the boutique hotel and he doesn't want to be big and all that. I think there's definitely space for those people. But I think that the way you have to think about your business is going to have to change in the sense, like, I think you've got to start thinking in terms of differentiation. Like, how, if I've got a boutique hotel, what makes it differentiated from the other inventory in the space, right? What makes it differentiated from the inventory that they can go rent from Vacasa or on Airbnb or, you know, from some other national upstart that we haven't heard of yet that secretly raised $150 million, you know? I think differentiation becomes vital. And a lot of it, I think, is fairly normal outside of our space. I think the reality is we're starting to see our space really mature from a financial perspective and competitive perspective for the first time. And so some of these more traditional business concepts, I think they're actually just going to become more appropriately required is maybe what I would say than they have been historically, right? There's been a lot of companies that have been able to grow with, you know, kind of subpar marketing, subpar branding up till now. But now that we're maturing, I think those more traditional rules of business, I think, are going to start coming into play. And to your point, we've got an actual real world manager running national TV ads now, right? Like, it's a very, very different game all of a sudden. But for people that are in mature industries, it just would start to feel more normal, right? Like,
how are we not talking about that too? Like, I feel like that's going way under the radar. Like, I feel like I've seen him on for a couple of weeks now, and I haven't seen and maybe this is happening in the background, and we're just not, you know, aware of it yet. But like, that's a big deal. Vacasa's running major ads on network TV in prime time. That's not cheap.
Yep.
Right. And so, again, like, that's an investment in that space. And you're looking at others. I think it's interesting. And I want to back up because you said something that I think is something I want to point out, too. You see a lot of the tech that is now, whether it's PMSs, hybrid PMSs, whatever, you know, of the world. You look at what Guesty just did. Right. Guesty just put out a platform for hosts. Right. That is specifically focused for hosts. You know, we've got other companies that have been doing that for properties doing that. You know, they're putting out a platform for hosts. FutureStay is putting out something for hosts. Like, you have a lot of focus around helping people that are not the bigger, you know, 100, 200, you know, unit managers. They're building technology right now that's allowing, I will say, the smaller segment or the smaller margin of our community access to the technology, which seems to be the equalizer. Right. Because I think that is the baseline that I think that we can all agree is going to be the key to success, regardless of your size, is having the appropriate tech for whatever you want your business to be. Right. That allows your business to thrive within that space and allows you to run that business well. And I think there's variations of that. And I think one of the things we were talking about earlier, too, is when we also talk about Vacasa again, what did Vacasa do? It invested in tech. Right. And invested in its own internal tech, where you look at companies like, you know, Milo and others that are investing in using tech that's on the market. Right. And John, you can speak to kind of what that's, you know, what that looks like in that space better than any than me. But like, we're seeing this diversity of how of strategy for businesses. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what prevails within that space. Because there's arguments on both sides for using, you know, either, you know, either the kind of the PMS systems that are broader within the space, or, you know, not everyone's going to have the money to invest in building out their tech like Vacasa is going to do, or like a Vacasa has done, or others in the market that are building that tech internally.
I think too.
No, go ahead, John.
Well, I didn't want to derail it. It was more of a kind of to continue with what Mateo was saying, like the evil empire of Vacasa. You know, if we're going to go, you know, I know we were talking previously about how, you know, if you're talking to property managers and, you know, that are in our space, the majority still like, that are, you know, in the 50 to 100 range or whatnot, they're still like, Vacasa, they come into our market and they do this. And they don't really have great things to say about Vacasa. And you differ on that. On that perspective. And, you know, the interesting thing about like, and if I were to put myself in the shoes of the Vacasa, you know, they're looking at it, hey, they're hiring a bunch of people that don't know the industry. They're coming from OpenTable. They're coming from different, you know, tech that aren't necessarily, you know, hospitality focused. They're not short-term rental focused, and they're building this corporate, lack a better term, you know, what are your thoughts on this? I know you have definitely opinionated on it.
And let's be clear, we're putting that out there. This is not Vicasa. We're not saying you're the dark side. We're just talking 100%.
About, yeah, you know, we're
just to make it clear. Yeah, you know, we're even in this space. We want to talk about it.
Fully. We are always Switzerland.
That's amazing.
Until we're not, but right now we're
still we're not. Yeah. So I actually think that, and I had a very impassioned conversation about this recently with a very talented operator. I think that I have a lot of love and respect for Vicasa on the whole, and that's coming from someone who, you know, when we were property managers, we got an offer from them to buy our company. We went through many, many rounds of negotiations, and they were a handful to deal with. So like this opinion isn't like, you know, excluded from having actually been, you know, in the sights of Vicasa at some point when they were doing, you know, their very aggressive acquisitions, and the approach was a little less than ideal, we'll say, at the time. That being said, I still think that what they're doing is worth a lot of consideration. I think that it deserves a lot of respect. I think that the argument I keep hearing that kind of makes me want to just go crazy is like whenever Vicasa takes over a market, immediately managers are like, oh, you know, for the other managers, get ready to pick up some inventory, boys. You know, like all the homeowners are going to jet and all this stuff. And I'm looking at it like they don't care. Like you guys are thinking, oh, Vicasa is a horrible operator, so we're going to clobber them. And Vicasa is looking at it through the lens of, guys, when we buy a company, you know, Matt Roberts at Verma, he said they're buying companies right now where each door, you know, it's the cost is 4% of the lifetime value of a customer. And so if they lose half the inventory, it was still an upside deal for them.
Yeah.
And so I just look at it through a very different lens, because I think that you have to understand that they're playing a different game. And the game I think that they're playing is, how do you build a search engine for vacation rentals? And people would be like, well, that's a weird thought. And it's like, well, it's actually not, because every time you go to Vicasa.com and you type in a destination that they don't have inventory, they just lost. And they lost hard. It would be like if you were really loyal to Marriott and you needed to travel to Cincinnati for work, and you type in on Marriott.com Cincinnati and they don't have any hotels. You're like, huh, okay. And then the next time you need to travel for work, you need to go to Atlanta, and you type in Atlanta and Marriott's got nothing in Atlanta. Well, there's not going to be a third time you do that, because now Marriott just trained you that they don't really have inventory most places. So you should probably go to Expedia or Booking.com. And so when you look at the financial model that Vicasa is buying these companies on, again, I think it'll continue to be wildly profitable for them, even if they lost half the inventory, as long as they're continuing to buy in to every major destination in the U.S. that someone could do a search. I mean, that's how you build a national brand. You got to have something for everyone. So I think recognizing that they're playing a very different game, and that they don't care about the things predominantly that local managers tend to care the most about. I think that there has to be some recognition of their business model and strategy being vastly different. And I think if we don't recognize that, we're not going to be well positioned to compete.
Great points, man. And it's interesting too, like the transition. And I know we've had Cliff on, we've had different people on talking about the early days of Vicasa and moving forward to what it is today. And like Vicasa was built like some passionate people that wanted to build something amazing. And look where it's gone. It's like, it's an amazing success story. And none of those people that were in the early days, like, had anything other than wanting to give the amazing experiences to both the guests and to the homeowners. I mean, that's how it started. And, you know, things obviously have changed, and when money comes in and different people come in, things have changed, but ultimately their business model has changed, but they're still putting out a good product. And all those smaller companies and even large companies, there's a lot to learn from a company like Vicasa, whether you're going to implement all of it or not.
You don't get to be the first vacation rental company that unicorns and reaches $1 billion valuation and suck at everything you do, period.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah. Period. And it was a brand. And there, I think we'll go back and we're going to study, right, the growth of Akasa within the space and understand that, like, they were kind of the first manager, the managing brand within the space, right? The big managing brand. Like, everybody else was OTAs and other things.
That's a good phrase. I like that.
They built a managing brand. Like, we talked about that with Simon. We talked about that with others. And really, when you look back at it, you look at companies like Cassiola who are going up in scale, but you look at what Vacasa was able to build as a brand and a consistent brand. And you can look at them as good or bad for the space, you know, whatever your personal opinion is, but you have to look at the conversations that they sparked and what those conversations have done for the industry at whole, right? Like, having the debate on the technology that you use to build your brand and scale your brand. We're having these conversations because we're looking at their example versus what they've done, what's been happening within that space. And, you know, I've seen both sides of it too, because I've heard people talk a lot of shit about Vacasa, but I've also been on calls with people from Vacasa, and they, you know, in markets with people are like, hey, we're selling. You interested? Hey, we're selling. You interested? So there's two sides to every story within that space. And so I think as an industry, where we can step back and really just look at it, you know, without the lenses of what our, you know, our individual thoughts are, and look at what's actually been happening and the resulting actions and the resulting impact on the industry at large. It's fascinating. It really, really is. And I think we're super lucky to be in this space because we've seen such monumental change. You know, and have been able to witness it for the most part firsthand during our time within the short-term rental space. And it's only going to get more interesting as we're growing and they're growing.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think
and the companies that are coming up too, like in the V-Trips and the Costco's and the other ones who are building out right now, right? You know, in the franchises and how they're all going to build. Like, I think this is a very energizing and interesting time for our space.
Go look at any of Sonder's marketing. I mean, dude, what they're doing is so cool. I mean, they're working so hard at building a lifestyle brand around vacation rentals. Like, to your point, man, there are really talented companies out here that, as managers, they get a ton of flack. But when you look at what they're actually doing, it's cool. And like, you go to, like, right now, I just pulled up Vacasa.com. If you scroll like a third of the way down, they've got this section they've added to the homepage that says thousands of ways to get away. And it's a map of the United States with all of the states colored in where they have inventory. I mean, you look at the map. I mean, they've almost got total coverage. I mean, in the central US, there's a swath that they don't have. But I mean, it looks like almost 40 states that they're in now where you can go book a vacation through Vacasa directly. I mean, dude, that's impressive. I mean, I think that's worthy of all of my respect at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to stop until it's every state. Why would they? And when you can buy inventory at 4% of lifetime value and you've got billions from Silver Lake, like.
And not to mention they're international too. They're international. So it's like, now, you know, it's not just U.S. based, like they're global.
Yep.
And so when you're looking at, you know, the brand and the big boy in the space, it's, I don't know, I'm not trying to overhype them or anything. I just think it's interesting and it's a case study. And as with everything, I don't think it's all bad or good. Right. I think it's not black or white. It's always gray. And I think perspective matters. Right. And who you are, you know, in terms of looking at this matters too. Right. So
I want to Costco go right where. We're direct competitors with Vacasa, right? And I mean, again, coming in as head of tech for the company, I'm not turning a blind eye to what Vacasa is doing when I think about our strategy. I'm taking a very long, deep look at what they're doing and what I've known they've been doing for a while, because we're not gonna escape them. They're the big boy, you know, and we've got to think long and hard about what they're doing.
Well, and you got to look at, you know, who, you know, I'm sure you're taking some good cues from the other franchise models as well. You know, what's working, what's not. You're a smart dude.
People say that. I don't know if it's true, though.
All right. Well, actually, I want to kind of, I know we're getting to the end of time here. I want to, what is going on? What will go on? Because, you know, if I look at, you know, you are no longer Nakori. You are part, you know, but right. What is going to happen to Pulse? Is that going to still, because I know there are still new people joining. I see it all the time. Like new connection requests. Is that still being updated? Is that, you know, what's the story with Pulse? Because I know a lot of people are heavily invested in it.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So Steve and Ryan, being the great guys they are, they graciously allowed me to keep it. And, you know, they've agreed to let me keep, you know, putting time and effort into it. It's something that I'm still very passionate about. I've got a number of things in the works, actually, that I'm excited to get live. I think it's going to drive a higher level of utility to the typical, you know, user. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of what's going to happen, hopefully more good things, you know.
I'm glad to hear that. And there's a lot of us that have enjoyed Pulse. And, you know, I realize I'm not utilizing it to my fullest potential sometimes. And then I jump on and I push a lot of shit for a couple of days. And I'm like, oh, I feel better now.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah, it definitely it was definitely a tough ball to try to juggle when we were going through the deal and getting onboarded. But now that kind of that craziness has passed us, I'm excited to start digging back in on that. And yeah, just I got some cool stuff in the works, and I'm very eager to get it live.
Awesome, man. How is that?
Man, I can't wait to see it.
Well, again, congratulations on being, you know, I get part you and the tech getting acquired by Casa Go. You know, Steve and Ryan, they got a good one. We're really happy for you. You know, friend of the show. You know, we'd love to have you on here in 6 months or something to kind of see how things are going, and you know, and kind of keep checking in. We're excited to partner with you, and thanks again, man. Appreciate you joining our show.
Yeah, man.
Man, thanks for the honor's all mine, guys. Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this. I think it's really cool what you guys are doing here, and excited to hear that it's growing and that it's going well. And yeah, sounds like you got some stuff that is happening in the background that you can't announce yet that I'm trusting are good things. And
good things.
Yeah, I'm excited for you guys.
Awesome, yeah. Man. Well, thanks again. Appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, guys.